This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live today at the Pint, 109th and Jasper, Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Our email, nationradio, theteam1260.com. We're here until 2 o'clock today. Big week for the Pint. They have the, it's St. Paddy's Day, right, Troy, that they're opening up the new Pint down on White Avenue, where the old Purple Onion was? Okay. All right. I even know where that is. We got an email here from Jono. Want your opinion on the Barons. They're in a real fight to get into the playoffs. It looks like Teemu Hartikainen is really coming on strong. Big physical, willingly scores below the hash marks as well. Don't look now, but Chris Vandeveld seems to be keeping his head above water. And I've heard some astronomical face-off numbers in anywhere those stats are held. No, actually, I look forever for time on ice and face-off numbers for the AHL, and they don't. I know that they. It's weird because I believe that they have them. They just don't share them, and the same as in the WHL. Some WHL rinks keep all that information. It's not released. Shots on goal, time on ice, face-offs, but it's not released to the general public, which is a pet peeve of mine. But what are you going to do, right? Hopefully someday we'll have that information because it is really, really valuable stuff. I've been waiting for this opportunity for quite some time now because David Staples and the Edmonton Journal have really done a masterful job of making their website and the Cult of Hockey a must-stop every day for Edmonton Oilers fans. David, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Alan. How are you doing?
Very well. I know some of the things that you've done because I've been dropping by Cult of Hockey for a few years now, but you really have done a splendid job of really adding writers like Bruce McCurdy and yourself and making some really interesting inroads for fans of the Edmonton Oilers and the prospects.
You know, we've been kind of part of what's been going on the blogosphere for a few years now. And really, it was Dennis King of MC79 who's argued the longest that I know of for following scoring chances, and he's been doing it for 3 years. And that's kind of the latest thing we've been doing, and I think the most interesting thing is, you know, we track the scoring chances for and against the Oilers, and I also break down the videotape of each scoring chance and try to figure out who's involved in each one. So in the end, you get kind of an individual scoring chance number, like for Taylor Hall, for instance, you might see he's created 300 scoring chances at even strength, and he's made mistakes on about, I think it's about 100 of them. So he's plus 200 when it comes to scoring chances this year. So that's what that's been the main focus of the blog this year.
And it's very interesting information. I hope one day that the entire National Hockey League adopts a similar, or at least, you know, maybe the blogosphere adopts a similar idea for all 30 teams, because I think it would be very interesting to compare someone like Taylor Hall to someone like Jeff Skinner, for instance, to see what kind of difference there is in who's running the show and who's doing what on the ice. Would you agree with that?
I'd love to know that kind of information for players on other teams. And you know, I'd really be interested in see at the center ice position, because Horkoff has excellent numbers when it comes to scoring chances, plus minus. He probably creates three for every one that he gives up, whereas Cogliano and Gagne don't do very well. Cogliano's kind of in the middle. He creates two for every one he gives up, and then Gagne, it's like almost maybe three he creates for two that he gives up. So there's quite a different ratio for the three centers. And I'd really be curious to see how other, you know, how that would rank with other players in the league. And, you know, we don't have league-wide scoring chance data yet. I think most NHL teams keep their own scoring chance data. So that'll be the first thing, is I think that the NHL will make that number official down the road sometime. And then to do the kind of work we're doing where you actually break down the play. I know NHL teams have done it in the past. The New York Rangers did it in the 90s. Billy Moores was telling me. He used to do a similar thing, breaking down offensive plays at least, with his team in Japan. So NHL teams are doing this kind of work, and maybe one day we will get all that information. I don't know.
One of the things that the error stat and the scoring chance stat that doesn't do is allow for quality of teammate and quality of opposition. How do you feel the next step is for us to progress from there?
You know, if we had the kind of scoring chance work that I'm doing for every team, it could be a basis for a good quality of competition or quality of teammate number. And you know, that kind of thing is crucial. We all know that, right? It's, you're one player on the ice. You can only have so much of effect on the game. your four teammates, your five opposition, they have a huge impact on your own numbers. So, you know, for now, I go by Desjardins' numbers for quality of competition and quality of teammate. I think that they're fairly strong, and they match up, generally speaking, with how I see the rankings on the Oilers, at least. So, you know, I wish we had better numbers, and I know how important that is, but, you know, it's just something that as we get better numbers to rate each individual player, we will have better overall quality of competition and teammate numbers as well.
The revelation for me this year was the difference it makes. It's clear to me that Tom Rennie is rolling four lines, and he's like baptism by fire for these kids. And what happens is it really makes a mess of the quality of competition number, where it's not as reliable as it was, for instance, when Craig McTavish was coaching the team, and you really did feel like he was line matching very closely.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to think who does get the toughest quality of competition. Like, if you try to think of the Edmonton Oilers, who gets that? Like, just think of the three centers. Can we honestly say who's had tougher competition? Or the better line mates even on the Oilers, Cogliano, Gagner, or Horkov? It's kind of hard to figure that out. You know, you might guess that Horkov has had tougher competition and better line mates. But between the other two, and I think it would be close between all three, with Fraser kind of fourth in both categories. So, yeah, I agree. It's not a very structured approach. They have their own structure and their own way of doing things, but it's not helping us figure that kind of thing out this year. So obvious, like it was under McKee.
Right. Bill James, years and years ago, he started something called, he's a great baseball writer, he started something called Project Scoresheet, and the idea was, and it came from a newspaper in Kansas City, the idea was to have someone in every Major League Baseball city actually tracking all kinds of things, like first to third on a single to left field, that sort of thing, very specific items that were in what was called Project Scoresheet, and two or three people ended up doing it for each Major League Baseball game as time went on. Is that something that you see eventually happening, either by the group community on the internet or by the National Hockey League as some kind of advanced stat for contracts?
I think that at SB Nation, they're already getting together to do scoring chances, and various guys have taken various teams and are breaking down scoring chances. So I think that's a step in the right direction. So I think we're already headed there. I do think to get a better kind of scoring chance plus minus, you do have to break down each play and try to figure out who was involved in the scoring chances for and who made mistakes on the scoring chances against. That is a much more difficult effort because you have to have set criteria that everyone follows and abides by. And there has to be consistency between how two people rate different games and rate different plays, which is hard to get. So I don't know if we're going to get that step, but I do think we're going to get scoring chance data for all the teams, and SB Nation will provide that. Now, I don't know if they're going to make it public or not. Sometimes I have trouble finding their results, but we are definitely headed in that direction, and I think it's fans who are going to be leading the charge on this.
This is Nation Radio on Team 1260. We are live at the Pint, 109th and Jasper, with David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. David, I want to change pace a little bit here and ask you a little bit about yourself. I think we had parallel careers here in a way. We were doing things, you were doing things at the journals, I was doing things at CFRN, but you were hanging around with Matheson and Cole, and I was hanging around with Rod Phillips and John Short, so we were on the edge of this sort of thing for a long time. What made you decide that you wanted to get into the sports aspect after a successful career, more on the news side?
You know, I when I first got into journalism, I wanted to be a sports writer. That was my, and I just never got that opportunity in the 80s. And then I started to get into different kinds of reporting, and I started to really like it. So, you know, my career took me into covering crime reporting and City Hall and politics and stuff like that. But I've always been very interested in sports writing. And would dabble in sports writing now and then, writing profiles of various Oilers players and coaches and stuff like that through the years. And I was involved in stories here and there. So, you know, when the internet came, it just freed up things for everyone. If you had an interest, suddenly you could pursue it on kind of on your own time. And for the first year at the Journal, that's exactly what it was, on my own time. It had nothing to do with my job. I was just a hobbyist writing the cult of hockey, kind of, you know, writing what I wanted to say. And everyone kind of, many people on the Oilosphere took me as kind of a mainstream media voice, when really I was just like them, a fan who did have a bit of you know, because I would sometimes talk to Maddie or people like that, I would hear a little bit of this or that, but really I am and remain just a fan. And, you know, there's such intense work going on in the blogosphere involving statistics, and I soon realized, like, if I'm going to be serious about this, I really have to think hard about this, up my game, and do a much better job of this kind of work. And so that's what I've been trying to do the last three or four years here, is try to come up with some things that make sense to me in terms of rating hockey players.
Every one of the folks who I have on and talking to about advanced stats, I ask them this question. So will you share with us, when you're looking at a player, say the Oilers acquire someone and it's from a different team and you don't know much about them, what are the advanced stats that you value the most and go to get an idea about that player?
You know, I find that the hardest thing in the world is when the Oilers pick up another player from another team, because I'm just not really... I look at time on ice, actually.
Yep,
I think that says a lot about a player. I mean, it says, did his coach trust him, you know, to be out there on the power play, on the penalty kill? How much at even strength did his coach trust him? I mean, look at Colin Fraser. We can see, you know, he got less and less ice time last year. He was on the penalty kill the year before, not last year, not in the playoffs. So it's like when he came here, we're all hoping he's going to be this great penalty killer and a defensive player, but clearly the Hawks had stopped trusting him in those roles. So time on ice is actually, to me, one of the biggest indications of what the coach and the other team is thinking of this guy, and it's something that I really look at. It's not an advanced stat, but it's one I favor.
No, it's a valuable stat.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I guess really that's my main stat when I look at other players, because so many other things are based on quality of teammate and quality of competition to such a large extent. It's kind of hard to tell from many plus-minus numbers, including, I find, Corsi plus-minus, whether a player really is effective or not. Someone like Patrick O'Sullivan might come, and he might have a lot of shots, and he might have a good Corsi number, but it's in the end, it's because he was playing, I think, with good line mates, and we just didn't realize that. So I'm just a little bit skeptical of relying on stats, and I don't really comment too much when trades are made, because I don't know about who's coming in the other direction too much, because the stats, I just don't have the confidence in them.
Yeah, good point. And the good thing about it is time on ice never lies. The spring of 2006, the Oilers' top four even strength defensemen were Chris Pronger, Jaro Spaschek, Steve Staios, and Jason Smith. And, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that we're a little ways away from that kind of quality and depth at this point in the Oilers' history. David, while we've got you on the phone, you have been the go-to guy on the arena for quite some time now for several Team 1260 folks. Can you give us an update of where we're at right now and what we can look forward to in the future?
I think it's coming down to crunch time. I think I think a deal is soon going to be put before council about how to proceed on this, and councils are going to have to decide. There's $350 million that has been spoken for in terms of this project. Cates is going to put up $100 million. The city is going to put up $125 million. And there's going to be a ticket tax, $125 million. Ticket tax is a user fee. It's money that otherwise might go to the owner of the team, to Kate. So it's private money. It's best seen that way. So right now, of the first $350 million that's come forward, 70% private, 30% public. There's $100 million, though, to come, and I don't see the city coming up with any more money. So I think that Mr. Cates is going to have to come up with some more money, and we'll see if the province comes through with some money for this arena. I know that they're going to get pressure in Calgary to provide money, so maybe they'll figure something out in that line. So I think it's shaping up to be, I think, a pretty good deal. It's going to, for everyone involved, there's going to be a little bit of risk for everyone. It's going to be serious risk for Cates, but there's going to be a lot of private money, and I think that's very important on a deal like this.
So the Northlands portion of that deal is no longer a big issue?
You know, I think it is an issue. I just think Northlands had to bring money to the table. Getting involved in any business deal, you have to bring money to the table, and they haven't done so.
Well, they did last time, right?
Last time in 74, Alan, they put together the whole deal. They brokered the whole deal, essentially. They got the 100% of the financing was done through them, you know, put together by them. They had a lot of clout, more clout back then. Because they controlled horse racing, which was a huge industry back then, and it's no longer so. they used to be tied much more deeply into all aspects of the political world. And so this time they weren't able to, I think that they may find a use for the Coliseum, complementary use, or we'll see what happens there. But I think Northlands, yeah, they've got a lot up there with the World Trade Expo Center. It's a $150 million building, all public money. They've got to make sure they run that at a profit. They've got lots to do with horse racing. They've got lots on their plate to figure out. And I think it's time that the rink came downtown and we go from there.
All right, David, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Al.
All right, David Staples from the Edmonton Journal. What he just said there, that is absolutely huge. For somebody who's lived in this city for a long time, the change is going to be absolutely immense with this deal when it finally does come down. And there's lots of people, if you know folks in various parts of the groups involved, there's going to be a lot of people who are, lives will be changed by this. It's a big, big deal, and it obviously is coming. This is Nation Radio. We're live at the Pint, 109th Street and Jasper Avenue. Coming up next, we'll talk to Jonathan Willis from OilersNation.com.